Welcome to No Shame, episode 58. Sorry here, I'm still in me gi, teaching a few children, so out to strangle people. No, but a man I've been trying to get on for a while now. Your name has been popping up, and every time I've been trying to find you, it's like, pew, 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 pew. He's bouncing around different parts of the globe. Carl Pendrith.
Yeah, I've been expecting your call.
Yeah, I've been waiting for 2 years. I'm only messing.
No, to be honest, this is actually like the first kind of interview type thing I've done in a couple of years. I made a decision to just stay away from all that type of stuff and just kind of focus on what I was doing. So, and I knew you were going to be on to me. And I've been chatting like to my brother and stuff. I'm saying, well, I do when Paddy gets on to me. I don't do interviews anymore. Yeah. And then the message finally came through and I just couldn't say no.
Everyone gets that. I can't say no to that little bollocks. No, but listen, the idea is what, as I always say, is everyone's story, and especially the stories of that first little kind of contingency as Irish lads that went through, is like guiding lights for people. And I only understand it as much as it is now from doing the podcast. Yeah. You know, the messages we get, people like, fucking mental shit. So, and everyone has some, because this was something I noticed, that say when we all broke through, Carl, that every one of us was a part of a different society.
So we
kind of like infected all the different societies at the same time. Mm. I've said this on this before, like, so say like mine is like council estates, and like Connor was kind of like that as well. Then you have like Ash was like females. Mm. Then you have like even like down to Brian Moore down the country a little bit. Then you have you're over the other side, like good side of Dublin. Yeah. You know what I mean? Good backing, good people behind you.
Good El North side.
You know, but you know what I mean?
And then you have
Chris out representing the Black.
We came from all walks of life. That was kind of the cool thing about us. Like, everyone came from around a different area. We all shared a dream, and we just kind of went on about our own way, and we just came together, and it was like the perfect storm, wasn't it?
Oh, like the fucking Avengers.
The Irish Avengers.
That's what it was. So before we even go into it, go all the way back to it for yourself, yeah? So you're starting, first time I heard of you, right, and then I met you.
Yeah.
First time I heard of you, Jim Donnelly had told me, Jesus, Carl went up the north there, he drove up on his own, knocked the lad out in a few seconds and drove back down. Well, I hadn't met you yet, right? I think I'd only even came back from Canada or something at that time. Mm. And I'd been like, he sounds fucking juicy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And tell us about that. Anybody knew that, before people could spell MMA.
Yeah, that was it. I started off in a different gym, and then I decided...
Castle something, wasn't it?
What was it called? Some
Three Castles or something?
No, Kokoro. It was called.
Wasn't that Three Castles?
No, that was the one in that
Val Rodri.
I don't know where that was, but I don't know the one you're talking.
Tripping, sorry.
No, I was in one of Kokoro, and I just took to it, like, I just loved it from the get go, and I don't know how in my mind, it's delusional at the time to think, right, I'm gonna give this a go, and obviously the gym I was in was just kind of a little amateur thing, and I started looking up where the best place to go was, and the same kind of name and gym kept popping up. So SPG, so got on to John, got out there, and I literally, the first time meeting him, I just said, look, I want to turn pro, I want to go, as you know, to the top, and he was like, yeah, come on in here, this is the place to do it, and just got going from there, got my first fight within a few months, won that, and I just remember, I remember my first meeting of you was, you had been away from Canada.
Wasn't in the dressing room, was it?
No, I think it actually was at a Matt Thornton seminar.
Really?
Or maybe just before that, but I remember it was around that time, because I remember you got your blue belt.
And it was like, I think there was like, on that day, right, there was like 52 people grading, and only two people got blue belts.
Me
and Jim Donnelly, but the ones who got blue belts.
And the blue belt was a big deal at that time.
You could levitate if you were a blue
belt. Because I remember at the time, I think there was only two purple belts in the gym. Like, Eric was a blue belt at the time.
Yeah.
There was Tom Camille. King. Tom King was a purple belt, and Roddy was a purple belt. And I can't even think of any other purple belts at the time. So like, the purple belts were like, they're like what a black belt is now.
Even if you had one of them,
and you're dead, right? And then I remember meeting you. And, you know, obviously, Maisie just now, this guy's a...
A
buzzer.
Don't hold it against me.
I remember Maisie, thinking what you were chatting about, all the stuff you've been learning over Canada. You were doing something with sports or something over there.
I done a sports and leisure course and a cross-borders communication thing. So being able to just fucking get on with mad fuckers.
I just remember chatting to you about that, and then I remembered... The Matt Thornton thing sticks out to me. I remember he was doing the seminars. Matt Thornton was teaching the seminar, and he was showing something, and then whoever you were partnered with put their hand up and said, because he was showing his technique, and they said, what do they do if the person does this? And man was like, what do you mean? So then the person, whoever was with you, goes to do something, and then you grab the leg and put it around the head or something. Matt was like, well, 99 of 100 people won't be able to do that, so don't worry about it.
And a man who actually solved that, that's why you're saying that, is Carl Townsend.
Really?
Bless them, yeah. Yeah. Carl Townsend. He solved it because he came back from lunch and footlocked me, the bastard.
Oh, yeah.
He did. He grabbed me and toeholded me. But it took him lunch to figure it out.
Yeah.
But like, even I was creative then, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that, day. But
that was your thing.
The first time I met you, when we caught, I walked in the dressing room, and it was the first time I'd say, I remember having a conversation with you, because I remember being like, fuck, that's brilliant.
Mm.
I said to you, why do you cuss so much? Why? And you said, because when I get to the UFC, I want to be like able to do it, because that's what all the big lads do. And I remember that, like, in that sentence, you probably walked off there hitting me saying like, holy shit, like, we're on the road to something here. Like, you probably would have been the first person that made me think like we never thought of that. We never thought like we're going to get to the UFC and we're going to do this, we're going to, but like when you came in, you brought that with you. Like, you brought that, like, from, I think it might have been from rugby as well. You were goal orientated, you knew the idea of putting work in and repetitions and the heart leads somewhere.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? Like, as you said, I was a buzz. I was probably on a buzz, to be honest.
Yeah.
I was going to the gym. I was going, Colin.
Yeah. I actually remember Connor said something similar as well when I first came to the gym. Because I had been doing strength and conditioning before when I was in the other gym. Because I'd been doing it at the ISI. That's how we started
working.
Lacey,
yeah,
on Lacey.
Yeah,
on Lacey. That's how we started working with On Lacey and stuff. Because... I remember.
And we owe them so much. Like,
ah, man, the stuff they did.
We should put a flag up for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Owen Lacey and John Connor as well. Like, those lads would bend over backwards for you. They'd give you the shirt off their back. Actually, speaking of giving your shirt off your back, I bumped into Owen Lacey. This sums up the man he is. I bumped into Owen Lacey one night. Well, this is going back about 5-6 years ago. It was during the summer, and I had been out during the day with a few friends. And, you know, it was just one of these nice days, and we weren't planning on drinking. So I was out in, I don't know, a pair of pants and flip flops, and you're having a few drinks, and then next thing leads to one thing leads
we're
to
going
we're,
out,
we're out. Out. We're in town, and we all go to some club, and we're out on the street, and we walk up, and then we get to the door, and the bouncer looks down at me, and goes, I can't let you in with flip flops. And I was like, just, you know, it'll be grand. And he goes, no, I can't, legal reasons, I can't let you in here with flip flops. And I was, what the fuck? And so I turned around, and my mates went in, and I was walking back. And Owen Lacey just randomly bumps into me. He goes, what are you doing? I was like, head home. Yeah, I mean, my flip-flops, he won't let me in. Owen Lacey takes his shoes off. Put these on. Give me those. In the middle of the street, at like 2 a.m.
What a man.
And,
what a man.
So, man. So, literally, like, the shirt off your back, literally the shoes off your feet, Owen Lacey will give you.
Yeah, and he is that kind of guy.
He is that type of guy.
Do you remember the time he had us in the car park in the USOI, and he was making us pull the Jeep? Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
I don't know why I remember that you were there, because sometimes you have these conversations with people and I'm like, no, I know you were definitely there.
Yeah, because
there is times where you're like, maybe I remember he was there because that was the day I was going to die. I was the last few people around me.
Yeah.
But that was, what the fuck, man? That was hell, wasn't it?
Oh, man. He used to put us through torture. Madness when you think about it. But I still, to this day, I think that's some of the, like, in terms of all the conditioning we did, different types, we experimented with different conditioning. I think that was the most applicable to fighting that we did. Because,
yes.
I mean, you know, when you're fighting, you're in there and there's so many different types of, energy being used, and, you know, aerobic, anaerobic, cardio and all that. I just think that pushing and pulling sleds, jeeps, whatever that, it gets the lactic acid going, it gets the breathing going. Yeah. It's literally everything. It's the closest thing you can get to feeling fucked, like you're feeling
numb. Yeah. Numb, like that numbness where you're like, we just met numb.
Yeah.
I love numb. No, it's great. Am I tired? Am I alive? I don't even know anymore.
That's it.
But that is it. That kind of thing. So I skip forward a little bit of stuff. Yeah. So you had an American passport because you were born in Boston.
Because I was born there. Yeah. So my mom and dad were over there, and I was popped out in '87. So I got just by being over there, I got an American passport, which is handy US citizenship.
Because that was handy, because like when it came to all the bleeding fucking the UFC, that was definitely handy.
Yeah.
Because like people don't look at these sorts of things like where the UFC might look at you, you might be rapid.
Yeah.
But you might have, say, a criminal record, or you might have a hard country to get a visa in, or something like that.
Yeah.
And they'd overlook you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, so it is a little thing, like,
where it's a big
it makes it easier and it makes it harder.
Especially in what I'm doing now with the acting, it's a massive advantage for me as well.
He's a fucking actor, man. We mate's an actor. That's what I'm going to say. We mate was in Baywatch. The Rock. But that's fucking brilliant. So let's forward to a few other fights.
Yeah.
A few cage contenders. Yeah. Put you in there against Liam Shannon. Right? Yeah. So, or everyone knows, and if they don't, they should fucking definitely go back and look, man. You probably had the hardest road to the UFC out of all.
Yeah.
And that's easy to say. You know what I mean? I think some of the fights I seen you in Cotton, I couldn't believe how you came through the other side, you know what I mean? And that's just being out straight. Yeah. Sometimes you're in chokes. Like, I think you made me a little bit grey at times. And I'd say John and everybody else too.
Yeah.
Say the Liam Shannon fight, the first one, cage contender, basketball arena.
Yeah.
Like, Liam Shannon looks like, he looks like, you know, the shark out of Nemo. There's no food.
That is exactly what he looks like. Yeah.
I've thought about this. Big back, big chest.
Yeah.
Big, scary looking motherfucker to be looking across that club.
Yeah.
Bring us to that fight. Yeah, probably look, I don't remember too much of that one. Cause,
well, here's me. I was probably 21 or 22 at that stage. That was a big night for us, because I feel like that was kind of when it all came together for the first time. That was 2010, so we're looking 9 years ago now. It's mad, isn't it? It
hasn't been done since.
Not like that. But like, that was kind of like the first big, we had all been doing our bits and pieces. The team had been coming together, but that was the first night that we had loads of us fighting at the same time. Remember, you were fighting some big, massive yoke as well.
Oh yeah, remember him? Woo! Fuck.
We were both fighting units.
Take him down. I hope he falls on the way in, actually. Because the minute I get him to that ground, he's dead.
Yeah.
There was no striking, but that was just, it was very limited, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
There was a lot of learning on the job.
Yeah, well, that's what it was. It was learning on the job. And I went in, I actually remember the first ever MMA event I went to, Liam Shannon was the main event. And this is like 2 years later. And I had like three fights, and he'd been doing it for years, and I was suddenly up against him. I don't know how it happened, but it was in there.
Happen back,
you know,
in the day,
you get, and it was just one of those
back
things.
Back in the day, you were just you're on the scene, are you? Yeah, you're fighting him.
Yeah, you jump in the water, and you either sink or swim. So I just jumped in, and
there's something good about that as well.
That's what kind of bred us, wasn't it? We had no easy road to it.
No,
I mean, you have more options now. There's different ways you can do it, but we took the hardest fights for very little money, and we just kind of, to me,
I always get into it for the growth of who I was. I was trying to save me legacy and me family or whatever it was when we got into it.
So
everything else didn't really matter to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like going out there with all the youths boys and fighting, because to me was their day. I wasn't thinking like, can't wait till we do this and then we get to there.
Yeah.
Like, this is fucking great. This is what I'm doing. This is my family, if you must. You know what I mean? A group of people to share something with. And then all of a sudden I had my other family there, which is talent, the whole lot in the place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Home ground. Yeah. Unbeaten in the basketball arena.
Yeah.
Yeah, unbeaten.
So then
then Cage Warriors came along. So you like, but there was one time where the wall in the gym, do you remember that? It was filling up and I was upgrading. It was going from cage contender belts
to cage warrior belts.
The belts were upgrading. It was like, I think every cage contender belt was nearly in the gym at one time.
We were leveling up,
you know what I mean? And the wall was covered, and then cage warriors came along. So you had a serious scrap with, Belkin?
Bill Coyden,
Bill Coyden.
Yeah, that was another one. I was, that
we
one.
Might even, we'll go another one as well.
Yeah.
But
well, that one for me was mental, because throughout my whole career, I'd been in college as well, in DCU.
Yeah.
And that fight was in DCU, and funnily enough, it was the week after my final exams, which I had done in the Helix. So a week before I fought Bill Coyden, I had been in there doing my last exam, and then 1 week later, I'm in that very same hall, and I'm fighting a guy who was a BJJ black belt. He had fought in Pride. He had fought in UFC.
European medals.
European, everything. And here's me just a week out of college. 24 or something at the time. No right to be in there with him, to be honest. No right to be even fighting at his level, but I never did, really. I never had any of my fights. I was always fighting away.
You can't get anyone to fight him. There's nobody at his level. Call.
That was it.
Do you know what I mean? Because that is a mad little situation when you're going in there. I mean, you look back at it now, because like, if anybody wants to understand about, people think, as I said, like, you're a millionaire or whatever, like true passion, True hard. If you want to see that, go and watch that fight.
Yeah.
And how much did you get paid for that? 1,200 quid or something?
No, joke me. I got paid like 600 or 700 quid.
Watch this fight and have a look at that pulse.
And that was a war. That was so I came out, everyone, like, I was a severe underdog in that fight, and I came out, and I drop him in the first round, I think, with a head kick, which is...
Because yeah, you were doing loads of stretching with John Connor.
Yeah, I've been doing loads of stretching with John Connor, yeah.
That's, oh, head kick!
I don't think anyone saw it coming.
Yeah.
And then I think the second round was... I won the second round, and then the third round, I was going in comfortably, having won the first two rounds, dropped him and everything. You know, I was going to cause the upset, and then the third round, he hits me with a shot, and I go down, buckled over. He gets on top of me, full mount, BJ black belt, ground and pound, and everyone...
Flat there, Colin.
Yeah, flat. And everyone just thought it was done. And actually, Chris Fields was in my corner. He said to me recently, it was like one of those, like, you know, the Tyson Fury thing at the minute where he just sits up. It was like, your man was on top of me. He's just after dropping me, he's on top of me, ground and pound me, and I just like put a hand and posted on him.
Damn it. He's a black belt.
He's a black belt,
and
yeah.
And he just posts him off.
Yeah, that was another, and the Helix went mental. I think that was that the night, was that the night Connor then, I think he fought Dave Hill.
Yes, and the first belt. The first belt,
yeah, career. Yeah. So that was another great night for the
blend
team.
In, go on. Another one on Cage, or on Cage Warriors, I'll skip back one as well because I've forgotten, is Bruno Cavallo.
Yeah.
What the fuck, Cole?
Yeah, that was...
About 1,200 quid for the boat, lads.
Yeah, yeah. Madness.
Bruno Cavallo was another guy, judo black belt.
Yeah.
Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt at the time of him, like.
And he'd been fighting light heavyweight and he'd just come down to welterweight. He was a huge dude.
A unit,
yeah, and he was on a 12-fight win streak or something. Yeah, I remember even thinking about that fight. I was like, right, just only you can't even you're looking at his accolades and looking at his fights, and I was like, right, I'm best off just focus on me for this because it was
that's what you're very good at. You're always very good at focusing on you. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I learned a lot from that as well from just watching. But I did a lot of learning around the team and from a lot of the boys from just watching.
Yeah,
and
without
going, well, what do you do? How do you do? Can you write that down for me? I'm just watching and listening and seeing the things. Like, I learned a lot of that from you.
Yeah.
That self belief, the idea of like watching someone getting up like that. The way you were getting up was like, like, fuck him, man. I bet that's there tucking me t-shirt. Like, one of these days is going to come. You know?
Yeah,
they were tough old fights.
Yeah.
And then even say before them tough fights, we'll go to the tough fights before the tough fights, the two brothers, the Malcos.
Going
to war with brothers.
Yeah. That was another man. And at the time, like, they were... No one wanted to fight them. One of them ripped the leg off someone with a leg lock. The other had knocked someone out brutally and... Yeah, fought the two brothers. The joke was it was the dad next.
We come for everybody. Yeah, all the Malcos. Yeah. But here, there was one time in that fight, and I remember you talking about that, and you get hit with a shot when you're in on the fence. Like, where else would you be?
Yeah.
He pushes someone in on the fence, trying to push you, and he hits you with a shot on your bottom row of teeth and your
lip. Yeah, yeah.
Went
in, yeah.
The bottom row.
And I thought they were knocked out. I remember because I was actually wearing a gum shield that wasn't fitted that well, so you know, most of the time your gum shield you bite into it so that your bottom teeth are into it, but this one was just real round, so my bottom teeth weren't actually in it. And I had him up against the fence, and he threw an uppercut, and it hit these bottom two teeth, and they went completely in. But I just thought they were knocked out. I think that was the first round, and the timer went. And then Chris came in. Chris and John came in between rounds, and I was in the middle of the ring looking around. What are you doing? Came over into the corner. I was like, I'm looking for my teeth. And they were like, forget your teeth, get over here. And then I went on. I won the fight in the second round, and then afterwards I went back in backstage, and I figured out that my teeth hadn't actually been knocked out. They'd just been pushed back. So I had to go to the dental hospital the next day.
Quickly, guess who figures.
Yeah. That's exactly it. That is exactly it.
Well, they are.
Yeah.
Is it not fucking mental when you think back and stuff like that?
It's madness.
See, when we have these conversations with people, sometimes they tell me things like that, and I'm like, why don't I remember that? Do you get what I mean? You remember little snippets like that. And
I forgot about that completely.
You see what I mean? Like, it's little things that come back like that. So then say, right, Cotton, we're all going out. We're all at the end of the UFC.
Yeah.
Right, because that was a crazy road as well. We all were coming up together, didn't know whether it was going to happen. A lot of us were very broke together.
Yeah.
No, I'll never forget a day in a week for making army mates rich on the fucking stage, except me. Three of the boys got bonuses, and I got Yeah, they know him now, bro. We can't even go to the same clubs as these motherfuckers. You know what I mean? He gave them 50 grand each. What the fuck am I going to do here with 10? You know what I mean? What am I going to do? I'm going to put it all on black boys. I see it's not nice. But. Sorry.
You got your day anyway, though. You got
Oh, yeah, at least.
Was it Canada you got your fucking?
We all got our day.
We all got it.
We all got our day. Yeah. Don't say no. I'm all good. But. So we all got something. So, Iceland.
Let's go to Iceland. That was a special one, wasn't it? So,
and before I even went into this, so we're all at the signing for the UFC. There's a few of us signing for the UFC. We're all going off to a training camp. In between that, obviously, you've been doing heavy rounds with Connor, heavy rounds with Gunny. Mm. Like, even with Spartan with Connor, like, going to the training of what went into this journey to get us all scientists. The amount of rounds we've seen you doing with Connor, ridiculous rounds. And, like, you are a lot heavier than Connor. Connor was fast and smooth. That had to be no fun.
Never. Well, the thing was, the further we went on, it was like the gap between me and Connor. I used to give Connor seriously hard rounds, and they were the rounds he needed. You know what I mean? Where I would drag him down, because I wasn't standing with him. He'd want to be up there, so.
No.
So I used to do a lot of rounds with Connor, and I'd go with my game, which was to get him off his feet and drag him down, and I'd give him hard rounds. But the further we went on, I actually remember. I think it was before that brand alpha. He jumped. three or four levels. The striking went through. You couldn't touch the guy. And it was a mission to even just get him down. You spent most of the round just trying to get a hold of him. So I remember, that Iceland trip was something else. But for me, the thing that stands out was the levels he jumped there. It wasn't just skill set, it was just mindset and everything. He was just like, that's where I am. And
I was living with him, so it was like I could see where it was coming from. Yeah. I was living with him at that time in Iceland.
But
you could see where that was coming from. Coming from like the idea of him coming home and getting problems and literally sitting there and just fucking solving them.
Learning
a lot from that as well, I did, from that little experience. Because then, obviously, you were Gunny's training partner and he was training his Gunny partner. And we were all fighting on the same card. That's mental when you think of it, you know what
Madness,
I mean?
Yeah.
What a little mental camp to be involved with, where everyone has so much at stake.
Yeah.
So you got people flying to Iceland to interview us.
Yeah, it was madness. I mean, when you think about it, that for me anyway, that Dublin night was the pinnacle of it all. That was the highlight. And I don't think I ever got past like the heights of that.
No.
That was for me, that was the shining moment. But it was brilliant just the way it went down. It was so many of us together doing it.
Yes.
We had a little camp over in Iceland, and even the people that didn't get their spot in the card that might have been there, like Chris and Phil, they were over there helping us. So it was like, and it was a real team effort.
100%. And the boys, even though I made sure boys were like, I put Clive in my corner.
Yeah.
I was like, Clive's probably never going to get like a... He's doing so much.
Exactly. I had own Gerrity there. It was brilliant. We had this like, and it was this team thing, and it was, even though not all of us fought that night, it was a big team celebration. It was brilliant.
It was made. Yeah. I remember standing in the crowd right after it, like, and literally I just couldn't believe. Like I just couldn't believe what was going on. I was watching your fight, and like I'm in the crowd now. I'm at the meeting in there, and now I'm a fan. I'm sitting there with the boys drinking, like, and it's like. But like petrified, and then even when Neil was on, Neil's like, it's going back and forth with the crowd. It's like a wave, whoa, you know, the swing of it.
Like
from the whole card up, it was an incredible
it's
situation.
It's mad.
But Iceland. What's your take on going to Iceland for training?
I loved it. Away from everything, and it was just everything was focused around that. You were away from all distractions, and you know, you didn't have to think about everyday life things as much. I mean, you were away, and it was just, you were there to train, and that was it.
That was a nice little spot, wasn't it?
It's a great spot. I did a lot of camps over there because I used to be brought over for Gunny's camps.
Yeah,
so I actually was over there, I'd say, 8 or 9 times. You know what I mean? For all his UFC fights, I used to be brought over. And even before his UFC fights, I was going over to do camps with him. So I spent a lot of time over there, and I loved it. You know, all the food over there is clean. The air is clean. It's just a clean, healthy place to live, isn't it?
Different level. I've been over a few times now. I've even been over times where I'm on holidays and I had a car and I could drive around, and I was like, it was just a crazy experience. I know for me, when anytime I was over there, I was like touching myself. I was like, not that way. Maybe sometimes. But like, you know what I mean? This is incredible. Like, we're all in Iceland getting ready to fight in the UFC. And then we bounced back to Dublin. So obviously we went through some of the nights of of the UFC Dublin, but we'll go straight to the obviously the pinnacle situation.
Yeah.
Like, you're in there and you had been in the Ultimate Fighter before this then, hadn't you?
Yeah.
You
know, yeah.
Had been in that, so you knew the guy that you were fighting in a way of like, where like,
yeah.
And now what he's like, and he was known for juicing before, wasn't he?
I don't know if I knew he was juicing before. I know, I think mentioned something, I think, to Chris or something. He was on our team on the Ultimate Fighter. He was one of the few people I actually got on with.
Yeah, no, he seemed like a nice little lad.
And, but yeah, we ended up fighting him, and I had to do the fight, even though it was a welterweight, I had to do that fight at middle because I did the Ultimate Fighter at middle. Yeah, so they said, look, we'll give you this fight. And so I fought him, and he was a big dude. And we went in there, and the first round, I suppose you could say it didn't go to plan.
Didn't go my way.
Yeah. I went in and he dropped me with a right hand within a couple of minutes, and then he was on top of me, and he was, you know, it was some vicious ground and pound. And then I somehow got out of that, and then he got me back, and then he had a choke in, and you know, it just went from one bad situation to another. And I have to say, to this day, I have to give credit to Mark Goddard, because every second I was in that fight, I was still fighting. And there were some refs that might, you know, I was on top, but I was putting myself into worse positions to get out. And I feel like, you know, when he was on top of me, I could have just put my hands up like this and not moved, but been deflecting the shots. But I feel like that's giving up. You're just giving up. You're staying still.
Stopping, yeah.
But I never once like considered that. I was like, right, when I was in a bad position, I was like, oh, I have to get out. I have to, you know, shrimp here, whatever. And I was taking more shots doing that.
Yeah.
But I was still getting out, and I still, to this day, I have to give credit to Mark Goddard, because he knew I was fighting. He always says to you before the fight, if you're showing that you're still fighting back, if you're still in the fight, I won't stop it. And he didn't stop it, because some other refs might have stopped it there. And I had no intention of stopping there. I just kept moving. I got back to my corner after the first round, after being dropped, you know, taking some vicious ground and pound. He had the rear naked choke in. I think he even went for an armbar or something. There was four or five bad situations. And I got back from definitely a 10-8 round. I'm sure every judge gave a 10-8. It was a bad round for me. Good for him. And then I came in and I just reassessed, and I was like, right, just have to start fresh now, because
here we go again.
Yeah, yeah.
Not pretend, doing that one.
Just pretend like it's starting again. And I went in, and I just came in him with a few shots, took him down. He got back up, took him down again, and I just started putting the pressure on that I was known for. I just kept it, and I think he probably exerted himself quite a lot in the first round trying to put me away, because he had me in positions. He, you know, he was like, right, he's done here, and he exerted a lot of energy, and you know, he started to tire, and then I eventually got him down and got the choke in, and the place went mental.
It was as I said, being able to witness it, and being able to witness the walk to it, I was glad I went first. Then I got to stand back and be just like, this is fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's like, I couldn't believe it. There's no way everyone's gonna win.
Mm-hmm.
And as it's going through, I'm like, it's gonna fucking happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's getting more assured as it goes on. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The crowd is even more behind them. Like, and if that had been in a different place, we know that you're the toughest fucking an old boo. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But the Dublin thing, because I know what got behind me. People are saying that the crowd fired fucking riot affected me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I hadn't even fucking, you know what I mean? I was ready.
Yeah, definitely. You've got that pride factor. Oh,
you know, but see, you're standing there fighting in front of your whole town. So we fast forward on, right? Then another great night, I thought, that was, especially for the Irish, probably one of my highlights. I'm going to actually put one of the pictures up of me and you, and it's brilliant. There's a picture where I'm kind of looking at a camera, and then you're looking behind me, kind of like, the fuck's he looking at, Paddy? I was like, just kind of freaked out in the dressing room, because we were starting our warms at the same. Do you remember that?
Boston.
We stuck up our flags, had the flag, kind of thing. This is Ireland. This ground that I remember saying is Ireland.
But that was like, it was funny, because that was like when we first started off in Cage Contender, and then there was loads of us fighting.
Yeah.
And then we used to get our own change room, which is a rare thing. Usually you're in with other people, because there were so many fighting in Cage Contender. We used to get our own change room. And then that sort of thing kind of happened in Cage Warriors as well, where, you know, at the start, there's only one or two of us fighting, and then there'd be four or five people fighting, and we got our own change room. And then it was literally leveling up. And then we got to the UFC, and we were starting to get our own change room, putting flags up and putting our own music on.
Yes. And brilliant. And even the boys like that would be walking, like they... You see the security guards, like, we're part of this, haven't I, boys? Yeah. Come on in here, PJ, you're fucking part of this. That's where it was going, yeah. Like, wasn't
that's it?
Yeah. And because like, I remember them, you were making the walk first. You were there, you were in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and like, I remember standing there, and we were watching it, and it was actually on me, I think Colin had only arrived.
Yeah.
Because he was on the light, I think, and you were in there, right? And that was it. That was a little bit of a heartachy one. Not on the way of like you being in a bad position, but the way of that you nearly got the James Bond choke.
I still lose sleep.
Twice you nearly got it, right?
Yeah. I nearly got it. No, I nearly got it in Boston, and then I nearly got another the Japanese necktie down in Mexico. So there were two submissions that had never been done in the UFC, and I was hitting them on everyone in training. And then I got it in Boston, and do you know what happened? So the James Bond choke, for anyone who doesn't know, is this choke where you pretend you're going for a Kimura lock, but then you actually wrap up their neck with your legs and you like squeeze this choke. And it's something mad looking that you see in a movie. And that's why it's called the James Bond choke. But anyway, I had been hitting everyone in training. And in my head, I was thinking, I could very well get this in the fight. And if I do, it's 100% 50 grand. So I end up in the fight. I'm on top of your man and I have the arm locked. And I'm like, right, I'm sinking in this James Bond choke. And what happened was, instead of thinking of the technique, I thought of the 50 grand.
You wouldn't blame you.
I'm getting 50 grand. I swear to God, in the middle of a fight going, I'm getting 50 grand here.
I'll stop you for a second. Could you imagine some lad having your neck, right? And someone saying, if you can finish him with that, I'll give you 50 grand. Oh, you feel bad for the other lads.
Yeah.
Sorry, continue on.
So what I did was, usually what you did is you threaten with the Kimura and then you lock up things.
Lifts the neck up.
But I saw the 50 grand and I just went straight. I didn't even bother trying with this. I just threw the legs on and he kind of had his neck to the side. So it wasn't fully on and I was squeezing. And you know when you got something with your legs and you're squeezing it, you've only got so much you can squeeze. Yeah, and I was squeezing for a while and I knew his neck was turned, so I knew it wasn't on. And I was like, I've done it, so.
Because I remember your dressing room, like when you were going through this, it's like, oh my fucking God!
There's actually, I think it's in Connor, you know, the RT documentary, the first one Connor did. There's footage of you and Connor in the background watching it. And when I'm going for this James Bond joke, and you're going, absolutely.
It's mental, because it's like, the whole world doesn't really know what's going on. But in that little moment, there's this little group of people that like are engaged. And not only just that, because like, you've been hitting this in the gym and it's like, he might get that, and it's like, oh my God, he fucking might get that, as it's really
good. I don't think anyone knew, because it wasn't even mentioned on the commentator.
I don't think it was picked up on, I think
they mentioned there was a Kimura going on.
John Connors were when you were on in the USA, because when he was going out, he was like, he's getting me with his choke. Sorry, I don't know anything about that one. I don't know how to fix that one. So fast forward, Tom. Now, it was actually Pete Carroll that made me ask you this question. He said, you have to ask Cuttle this question. So I have Cuttle on this week. And he said to me, ask him about the plan that he had compared to yours.
Yeah.
So the idea is like, Cuttle wasn't in there. So, no, I won't say the same way, kind of like as we were. Mm. When you got the contract, you were like, wait, I'm making as much fucking money out of this as I can. You were doing the smartest thing, if you think.
Yeah,
rather than like thinking like, wait, well then I'll become a superstar and then I'll fight for belts and then I'll get like, kind of at the time, he was like this, but where you are like thinking like, you were clever.
Yeah.
You were clever, if you must.
Yeah, well like I think I kind of, it was just before I got to the UFC and I was seeing how much I put into it and I got nothing. I was broke going into the UFC. Even though we were broke going into the UFC.
I owed my 10 grand from doing it now, boys.
Oh, yeah, I owed it.
If that pulled out, I was fucked. I had to leave the country.
If I didn't get the bonus in Dublin, I would have just been paying back money.
The bonus
well. Is.
Yeah,
the bonus is.
You
deserved
the flogging you put in. You did.
Yeah. That was it.
You were having the worst day of your life. He was having the worst day. Or you having the best day of your life. He was having the worst day. I lost, but I got 50 grand. No, I didn't. You deserved it for juicing. If you're going to a fighting sport and you're using PEDs or juicing like that, it's not like fucking tennis or football.
People. Exactly. Different. Yeah, yeah. You're so, not. You're putting the other guy's life in or safety in your hands. I mean, 100%. So I just from the get go, from my UFC debut, I was like, right, put all this money away, and I was planning on doing a restaurant, and that honestly got into my head when I was training, because you're always on the go. And but you could, at the time, there was never any healthy places you could go to at that time. You know, if you were going to a shop, there was chicken fillet rolls.
It's a good one now, though, isn't it?
It's a decent one called Chop.
Chop.
So I was planning on doing the restaurant. I was going to do my own thing, and then I just came across Brian Lee, who owns Chopped, Chris was training him, and I decided to go the franchise route. It made a bit more sense, just because I didn't have too much of a background in it, so I jumped in on that. And then I was just like, right, I blast out my contract. I was on the Ultimate Fighter contract as well.
And people don't understand what tells us.
So usually when you're in the UFC, you get, you know, a 4 or 5 fight contract. So if you get, say for instance, you get a 4 or 5 fight contract, you'll fight out the first 3 fights of your contract, and then they'll offer you a new one. And you know,
I got my second one, so I was kind of lucky in that way.
You didn't get the Ultimate Fighter one, did you?
No, I got my second one.
Yeah, you got.
So I got my first contract, 4 fights. You know what I'm saying? And then on the tour, they got offered it. But you can negotiate, is what they think is on that, isn't it?
Yeah. But on the Ultimate Fighter one, it's the 10 fight contract. Right. So you can't really every contract a year, realistically, as long as you're doing well, and you are going to be doing well, if they're going to give you a new contract, you're going up. Whereas the Ultimate Fighter one is real strange, and then it's 10 fights. You don't really get to renegotiate until you get 9 fights in.
And so if you're not doing well, what people don't understand is, it's not like, deadly, I have 10 fights, I'm definitely going to get 10
fights.
It's like, no, if you do 10 fights really, really well, you can stay. And we'll give you this little bit of money. But if you do 10 fights, if you don't do 10 fights, great, you're gone.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And so
the money wise is like, it still is not a slip. It's not a jump, isn't it?
No.
Like the jumps and the fights, like as I said, because the worst thing to me we found was like, it's another bit of advice I got, don't go broke acting rich.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
All of a sudden people can give you the you're rich.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, man, you're fucking up. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But you're not really when it comes to like at that stage, it's exactly, like, it's nothing.
Broke people stay broke by acting rich. You know what I mean? So,
I like that one.
Yeah, so. And yeah, no, even though I got the double bonus in the first fight, and I didn't splash out. I was like, just putting away.
Yeah, I always have the same little bonus. I have a double and I abandoned the car and all. I was driving a Toyota Avensis in the park, and I was saying, if I win, I'm leaving the hill.
Yeah,
but I was clamped to death now. Like, day, so I was like,
hadn't been taxed in 2 years.
It's been good. 2 years, you're mad tree. Still don't tax. Well, go y'all on them roads. But,
So I just blasted you. I was blasting through the contract. I was like, I get through this. And I fought 4 times in a year, 5 times in 15 fights. Five fights in 15 months, yeah.
Fuck me.
So I was going from camp to camp. I was burnt out.
Because this does happen as well. And not only do you burn your body out, you can burn the fucking reason to do it.
That's it. And just mentally, you just can't. Can't do it anymore.
I mean, tell me, that takes a few years to go back.
Yeah.
It doesn't just pop back. I know, if I could still be fighting, I would. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But in a way of like, where I've had a rest now, I'm like, ah. But at the time, I remember being like, kind of a little bit like, it doesn't feel like I want it as much as he does anymore.
Because
it wasn't such a long road to get there.
I don't know. I think because we had such a hard road to get there as well. I feel like you've only gotten, you know, X amount of time to put into it and how much you can put into it. And I think we possibly put in 50% of that before we got there. Yeah, you know what I mean?
100%, because that's what I'm saying to you. Like, because when I look at some of the fights being announced, they're not going forward now. I'd be saying to myself, is it a good thing or a bad thing that guys aren't fighting like these fucking?
I'm asking myself that question as well, because you see now there's more options. I mean, when we were doing it, you just took the toughest fights. I mean, we could have not taken them.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we could
have. Like when someone rang you with a fight, I was like, fuck, we have a fight. I didn't know that. I was like, do you know what, you could pick someone else, or you could say no.
That's it. I mean, and you can look at it. I think there's kind of two ways you can go about it now as well, and I don't know which way. You know, I definitely, like, you look at the two kind of promotions you can go through now. There's Cage Warriors, where you're going to get the toughest fights possible, and the money isn't amazing. But it's a proven path to the UFC.
100%.
And then, like, there's other promotions now that will pay you really good money, and you won't have to fight as high caliber fighter. And then I'm thinking, is that the way to go then? Because you can actually, you can make money now to live off fighting and not fight as tough, and you can build your way up. So I'm always going to take pride in the way we did it, taking the toughest fights and for a little money. We had no option. There was no option of easy fights for good money when we were coming up. But I ask myself now, because there's the option which way you would do it, and I don't know which way I would do it.
Do you think the byproduct of that might be a lot of people dodging fights? Like, do you think a byproduct would be, like, as 5 years go by, there's obviously going to be loads of broke animals on one side, you know what I mean? That being fighting each other for ages.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have guys that have money, you know what I mean? Guys that have like kind of a made if you must.
Yeah, well, it might be the smarter way to do it by building it right. But is that what you're saying? By taking the easier fights and
but I don't know, but as I'm saying, then you have, say if you had one group over here fighting each other for not much money, but they're all animals because they're all hungry and starving and they are tough fights.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you have the other group, if you have another group, say, are doing it the clever way and stuff like that. Do they get the same, do they keep the same juice or the same kind of like roughness and toughness? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, that's the big question, isn't it?
Silk sheets, that's what they say, sorry.
That's it, because we had that toughness, we had that grittiness about us, you know? And I don't know if you...
still had sandpaper sheets.
Sure, you were fighting... you were fighting... Out in Tala, you were fighting your man Sitnikov. This guy, and for people that don't know, this guy was a like submission expert, footlock expert from Lithuania or something.
It's all about me.
He beat Conor. He's one of the few people to have a win over Conor McGregor. And you were in there fighting him for, I don't know how much, a few hundred quid.
I fought two of them for five.
he was doing a 2-for-1.
2-for-1. 2-for-1. We didn't even negotiate the contract. Nobody that number came from.
And you were lucky to get paid in those things. You had to chase the promoter out to the car park.
We really had this conversation. It's funny, there's a clip of it. It is. We're talking about vouchers and all. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's good, but as I said, but here, then when you look back at it, if it wasn't for fucking John Ferguson putting the bleeding the nuts on the table that day, we wouldn't have had the fucking these things even. The fight.
Oh, that's it.
Even
that
we had to chase you, you fucker.
Yeah.
That's how it is.
That's it.
I think we might have tweeted as well. I'm a Grand Prix like bantamweight champion.
Yeah. I'm still out 150 quid, I think.
Yeah, 200 quid. I'm knocking around next week, will be. Well, here, what a fucking mad road.
It's been a mad road. And so, it's class how, like you said, we all came from different areas and different backgrounds. And we went on the same journey. It's class, isn't it?
Do you know what I love about it? That a lot of us, a lot of the guys, like, pick up the phone and ring and ask them for something. Like, ask them for help now. Or ask them for, like, just a chat. Or I'm still tight with them guys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even now, they're, like, even now, they're gunny, like, the way of, like, where you create a bond in that little way where them people are forever. Like, we'll be grandads.
Yeah.
And we'll be, like, that little group, you know what I mean? No matter what happens after that,
exactly,
you kind of change that, you know?
That's
so
it.
When it came to retiring, so at the time, do you feel like you were a little bit exhausted when you
said, oh, I was 100% exhausted, yeah. I done all the five fights in 15 months. I was not just physically exhausted, but mentally as well. Right. And that's the other thing you have to put on top of it that other sports people wouldn't have is the constantly cutting weight. I was a big weight cutter. So I'm 5 fights in 15 months. I'm constantly watching what I put in my body and going up and down weight, and it's just exhausting. And I was a bit tired at that stage. And then I had set the wheels in motion for the restaurant. And
you chopped Blanche's Town now as well. So
yeah.
you run the restaurant like what you set out to do.
Yeah, exactly. I got the restaurant
cool.
out. Yeah, yeah.
That was awesome. The open day of that, I remember. Really.
Yeah, yeah.
God owns a fucking restaurant. This is mental.
Yeah, mad one. So I opened that one up, and that was that could go on well straight away. And then I started dipping my toe into the acting.
Yeah,
which,
the acting here, man, the acting's going well.
Yeah, it's going really well.
Yeah,
going
well. Because
yeah.
What was the one you put up? You put one up, I think it was that for Christmas.
Ah,
My name is Lenny, isn't it?
My
name is Lenny.
My name's Lenny, yeah. What a fucking clip in that one. That
yeah.
had to be awesome to play.
Ah, that was brilliant. So I was playing this. For anyone that hasn't seen the movie, I was playing this Irish traveller that Lenny McLean. It's a true story about. It's a true story about this guy Lenny McLean. He was called the Governor. He was like a champion bare knuckle boxer from London, from the East End in London. Real tough as nails guy who actually went into acting as well. He was in Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels.
I fucking hate this.
Yeah.
Perfect film for him.
Yeah, exactly.
You just play
yourself,
Lenny. Yeah.
So, I got a part in that and. Playing an Irish traveller and that he has a fight with, and there wasn't as much in it in the script, but
body action.
There was only a small amount in the script, and then just to get into the role, I started watching all those traveller call out videos on YouTube just to kind of get the kind of accent down a bit and the mannerisms and stuff, and. Then I arrived on set the day for that scene, and they were like, right, they put me in the costume, makeup and everything, and we got going, and I shot it, and I think they weren't kind of expecting what I did, and they were like, Jesus, that's pretty good. Yeah. So we shot that part a few times. And then the director comes up and he goes, look, I'm loving this. Can we just stick the camera in your face and you just go for it? And I go, what do you mean? He goes, I was just, what you were doing there, but just say your own words and just go for it. So I was like, yeah, sure. And this was all unscripted and he just put the camera in my face So I just started regurgitating all the stuff I'd seen in those videos. That and all this stuff. It went really well. And then I went to the premiere. When I came out a few months later, and we were sitting in there watching it, and that scene got probably the best reaction to the whole movie. Like everyone, there was people laughing, there was people, and then at the end of the scene, everyone's clapping, so it was deadly. I really enjoyed that. And then what happened off the back of that was, this is how the movie business works. The director of that, who loved what he did there, got on to my agent and was like, look, I've got a new movie coming out and I want to give Cole a role in it. So he got on to my agent and they sent me the script and they were like, read the script and tell us which role you like and we'll see what we can do for you. So I got sent the script for this movie and like a London crime thriller one, and I got to pick, I had a few choices. I got to pick what role I wanted and I shot that there in February or March. It's still not out yet, but that's another really cool one.
And do you feel like you're getting the knack of that now?
Yeah.
Because you don't believe in Baywatch as well, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I know you don't have, like, that had to be fucking weird.
That was a tiny thing. And then the part that was supposed to be in it, they didn't even make it in the movie, so there was nothing really came out of that in the end. But it was just a deadly experience being on the set.
You're around this week, yeah. with The Rock and your man, what's his name?
Zac Efron.
I'm already looking at it here. Zac Efron. Yeah, but like that had to be a mad scenario, being like kind of on the scene.
Yeah, it's mad, mental, and you're just kind of, you're a little bit prepared from having been in the UFC. Because remember when you're first in the UFC and then you're. Yeah, you might be on the card with, I don't know, some big name person. You're on the card with John Jones or something, and you kind of learned it. You're not gonna go, John Jones. Yeah. I can't believe I'm on the card with you.
John Jones, we need the best shit.
So then when they're on the set and you're like the rock star, I'm kind of used to that, and now I can go, Jesus, what's the crack? You know, you just kind of know. You're like, all right, you just kind of play like your equals, even though we're far from that.
No, fair for me. Yeah. Well, we better wrap this up because I've got a bleeding class to teach now as well. But that was a pleasure, and I got some of them questions. I probably even reminded you of some stuff that you didn't even bleeding remember.
Yeah, that's it.
He's like, I'm going out here remembering things I've never remembered before. You know what I mean? So that was episode 58 with the Punisher Pendrant. We wish you the best, bro.
Yeah, cheers, bro. Thank you. Thanks a million, bro.
Catch yourself.